As you may be aware, we are continuing our series in the book of Genesis this morning. Last week we talked about the creation of man and woman, human beings. And this week we move on a little bit further. Our readings this morning are from Genesis chapter 1 and also from the book of Mark. And we begin at the end of creation. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. Then we turn to Mark chapter 2. On the Sabbath, Jesus was going through the cornfields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some ears of corn. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" He answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat, and he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for people, not people for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath.'" When I was back in London, I used to be a youth worker for quite a number of years. And one of the highlights of the young people's year was the 24-hour lock-in that we used to do. I don't know whether anyone's ever done a 24-hour lock-in, but it's not, as you might imagine, a sleepover, as some people like to think. A lock-in, or the way we used to do them anyway, is continual activities for 24 hours. No sleep, just continual activities. So you begin one morning. We used to begin on a Friday morning. It was in a holiday, or we'd do it on a Saturday morning. And we would have continual things happening, either a quiz or some indoor hockey or a film, and all the way through till the very next morning when we'd finish with breakfast, and then people would go home promptly so that Simon and I could collapse into bed before we had to get up again. Well, one year we did our lock-in, we played our games, everyone was joyful and excited, we had our dinner, we played some more games, we get to about 4 o'clock in the morning. Foolishly, I decided to watch a film at this time, don't know why, and everyone's falling asleep. And because it's a lock-in, you can't sleep, so there's me desperately trying to stay awake, going, "Come on! It's a lock-in! Yay!" To which they're all getting really grumpy with me and now shouting at me, "It's no fun anymore, Kate, why are we doing this ridiculous thing?" Because they're all so tired. But we got through that. 8 o'clock in the morning, we had breakfast. By 9 o'clock, we were ready to go. All the parents arrived, the kids left, and suddenly, one girl called Anne, we loved Anne, went, "Oh, was I supposed to ring my dad to come and get me now?" And we're like, "Yes, Anne, it finishes at 9. "Oh, where is your dad, Anne?" "Oh, well, he's over the other side of London." "Oh, so if you ring him now, Anne, how long will it take for him to get here?" "About an hour." At which point Simon and I, on the verge of collapse, graciously said, "No worries, Anne, we'll wait with you." An hour later, Anne's dad finally arrived, decided he wanted a bit of a chat about the youth work. By 11:30, we finally got home and collapsed into bed. But I can just tell you, I remember this lock-in because, not for the tiredness and for Anne being late, although that added to it, but for the moment that I sat down on the edge of the bed with a big smile on my face thinking, "Oh, it's over." And I lay down and I went fast asleep, straight out, probably still smiling, satisfied and exhausted that it was all over.
And here at the end of Genesis chapter 1 and the beginning of Genesis chapter 2, we get this same sense of satisfaction. Because over the last 6 days, God has been busy creating. In fact, he's been very busy creating light and darkness and sea and sky and land and plants and day and night and birds and animals. And finally, and most spectacularly, as we mentioned last week, human beings, the pinnacle of his creation. You could say it's been one heck of a week. Busy, busy, busy. And so it's not really surprising that on day 7 of this creating phenomenon that's been taking place, God finally stops. He stops to take a well-earned rest. And it wouldn't surprise me if when God stopped, he had a huge smile on his face, sitting down with great satisfaction. There's certainly a sense, by the way that this passage is written, that when God stopped on the seventh day, he did stop with delight and satisfaction to admire and relish all that he had created in the past 6 days. And not only did he stop to enjoy, but in his enjoyment, he also then decides to bless. He takes the opportunity to bless this seventh day and make it into a holy day. So that from that moment on, this one day will be a holy day of rest. Now we know from Exodus chapter 20 later on in the Bible, when the Ten Commandments were given to Moses, that this day of rest, set apart from the beginning of time, would become for the Israelites the Sabbath. A day at the end of the week which was distinctly set apart for God. Where God in his commandments said, on it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigners residing in your town. This one day, the Sabbath for Israel, was to be a day dedicated to God. However, right here at the beginning of time, before the commandments were given, here in the book of Genesis, this seventh day, this day of rest, was not something that human beings were called to do. It was something that God did. God stopped. Because the work of creation had been completed. Of course, God continued to be at work in creation, but the initial outlay, if you like, was finally finished. There was nothing more to be done. So God rested. Which begs the question, why? Why did God rest? And when he rested, why did he bless this day of rest? I mean, we're told in the book of Isaiah that the Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired and weary. And the way this passage is written at the beginning of Genesis certainly implies that when God stopped, he didn't fall into a heap of exhaustion on the floor, but rather he just chose to stop. He didn't need to. He simply chose to have a day of rest. And then he made this rest of utmost importance because he blessed the day of rest, which is strange. Because the only other things that God had blessed up to this point were living and active. In other words, animals and humans who God blesses and tells to be fruitful. And yet here at the end of creation, God not only stops, but he then blesses an inanimate object. A day. A day when he's chosen to stop and take a rest. Even though he's got absolutely no need to do this. It seems odd, especially when things are just getting started. We're at the beginning of the Bible. But then again, maybe that's the point. Maybe that's the point because we know that Genesis is situated right at the start of the Bible, and so naturally it's a book full of beginnings, if you like. We have creation, we have sin, we have the flood, we have the start of the people of Israel through Abraham. There are things in Genesis that begin that then set a pattern for what is to come. And so maybe the seventh day is really no different. It's the beginning of a pattern. another beginning for God, if you like. 6 days of work followed by a day of rest. The beginning of a weekly routine. The routine of having 6 days that can be touched and handled and moulded by human beings, finishing with a day that is set apart, or if you like, a holy day, because that's what holy means, set apart for God. So that one day of the week, there will always remain a day that's supposed to be untouched, a day to be admired and enjoyed, rather than a day to be used to do things. And certainly for the people of Israel, this pattern of 7 days, this cycle, became tremendously important, especially during the years where they were in exile, where Jerusalem had been destroyed and they were dispersed throughout enemy lands, because they lived in lands where the environment was hostile. They could no longer freely gather together as the people of God. They could no longer sit and listen to the scriptures in a big gathering. They could no longer learn from the scholars all together. They could no longer live the pattern that God had given them to live in Jerusalem, but they could still live this cycle that God had given them at the beginning of creation, working for 6 days and resting for one, making sure they left a day of the week that was untouched, when they could choose, rather than to work, they could choose to trust God, to step back and put their trust in God. And in the lands in which they lived at the time, this was deeply significant. Not only because it kept them connected and orientated around God by coming back to him every seventh day, but also because the nations in which they resided at the time, their enemies, if you like, didn't have this rhythm of life. They didn't live in seven-day cycles. They had periods of rest every now and again, and of course they had days, because they had day and night, but the people of Babylon didn't actually live in 7 day cycles. This pattern at this time in history was unique to the people of God. And therefore, this was what set them apart as a people. They lived life differently, so that no matter what culture they resided in, they were distinct from those around them. You know, James has a little garage at home. I was told all boys need a garage, and so I got one. Rob's nodding, yes. All boys need a garage. He loves his garage, and along with his garage, got it from the toy sale, by the way, very cheap, excellent. Along with this garage came lots of cars, and they all connect with magnets, so you can have a whole string of cars. And also with these cars came lots of trucks, which connect with magnets as well. So you can take them all up the little curly-whirly bit and then, I don't know, throw them around the room, normally happens, but I don't know whether you're supposed to do that. But there's a difference between the cars and the trucks, which I found out, because the cars all connect with the magnets facing in the right way, but the trucks, they don't connect the same way as the cars. You have to turn them around, so their bottoms are facing the car. You know, the magnets are opposing, is that right? So you're trying to teach James about magnets, it's useless. But they do all still connect together. It's just the trucks are facing that way and the cars are facing that way. The trucks are distinct from the cars. They'll always be facing in the opposite direction. And similarly, this day of rest, this Sabbath, this holy day, calls the people of God, if you like, to point in the opposite direction to those around. There was no way they could go in the same direction because they were creating a new way of being. They were living a completely different lifestyle. They were distinct, if you like. Now, of course, this pattern, this new way of being that the people of Israel lived, became extremely distorted over time, especially this practice of the Sabbath as a holy day. It became distorted, and it changed from a day that was less about enjoyment and trusting in God into a Sabbath that was more about obeying rules. Until by the time we reached the New Testament and the passage that I read out, the people of God were so bound up in what they were not allowed to do so that the Sabbath remained holy, that it was almost unrecognizable from that day that God had rested and blessed. Law after law after law had been introduced by the Pharisees, and the teachers of the law had made it so important that people were scared to do the very smallest thing because they would break the Sabbath rules. And the Pharisees, far from hoping people obeyed the rules, would go round looking for those who might possibly be about to walk more than 800 metres or pick a bit of corn, like Jesus' disciples did, watching for those who would break the rules and break the Sabbath. So that when Jesus arrived and found this unrecognizable day, he decided to break the law, to do what he wasn't supposed to do, to eat some ears of corn from the field, and then make the declaration that the Sabbath was made for people, not people for the Sabbath. Or in effect, saying to the people of God again, you decide how you rest on this day. God has given it as a holy day. Which is all very well and good. But at the end of all this history of the creation of the seventh day and how it turned into the Sabbath and how it became distorted and how Jesus came back to say, this is a day of rest, where does that leave us? Where does it leave us who seek to follow God in 2012, years from when the Bible was written? And perhaps more importantly, where does it leave us in regards to how we spend our week in a society where every day of the week is becoming more and more the same? Well, you know, it seems to me that when God created the seventh day and set it apart as holy, later commanding that no work be done on it, he didn't do it so that human beings, so that we could become fixated about what we should do on a Sunday, which would be our seventh day. Instead, he did it so that we could learn to leave well alone, if you like. Because you see, making the seventh day a day that was set apart and holy, God in effect made it a day that we were not to touch. It's his day. It's God's day. A day to be looked at and admired, if you like. You know, when you have something special. A day that we don't try and mould and shape and control like we do every other day of the week. But instead, we take our hands off. We stop. And in stopping, we acknowledge that actually the world doesn't depend on our activity. And the purpose of us being here is not to mould and shape and control every moment of every day. But instead to take time to step back and acknowledge that actually, God is in control. The problem is, we're not really very good at keeping our hands off, are we? Quite a few years ago, when I was a lot younger, I was in Marks and Spencer's back in Warsaw, where I was brought up. That's Warsaw, not Warsaw, as some people think. Not so glamorous. And I was standing in the drinks section. Can't remember why I was in the drinks section. Wasn't about to buy lots of alcohol. And I was looking around and I suddenly noticed that I was standing by a fire door, which had fire door, do not open on it. And I thought, you know, you have those moments. I thought, well, what happens if you open it then? Why are we not supposed to open it? Why are they telling me not to touch it? So I was in an enclosed space, no one was there. I just thought, I'll have a peep, see where it goes. So I pushed the door, at which point alarms went off in the store and I could hear people running and shouting. So I did the only thing that any sensible and honest person would do. I became engrossed in a bottle of cider. Oh, fascinating. So many arrangements.
And people were running. Did you see who went out the door? I was like, no, I didn't see anything. I was just looking at this. People ran out, people with uniforms, chasing someone who had stolen the alcohol. I'd like to say that I went and owned up. However, I snuck out the other way. Maybe they caught the person, who knows? They could have stolen a lot of goods, you know.
We're not very good at keeping our hands off things that say, don't touch.
We're not very good at letting something be what it was intended to be. We like to fiddle a mess. We like to be in control. And in a way, that's what the Pharisees were doing when they created all these rules about what people shouldn't do on a Sabbath day. They weren't enforcing God's way. They were trying to control and manipulate a day they were never meant to touch.
Which is why Jesus came and blatantly broke their laws, declaring himself to be Lord of that day once more. And you know, I don't know what kind of life everyone leads here. I don't know whether our week is packed full of activity so we can't move, or whether we desperately search around trying to find things to do. But what I do know is that in our society, where there is an understanding that unless you're doing something, unless you're active, unless you're organising something, unless you're in control of your life, then in some way or other you're not really living properly. It's really hard to stop without feeling guilty or useless. And yet the whole reason for having a seventh day, the whole reason for God's creation, is that instead of collapsing exhausted at the end of the week because we have been so busy, or feeling guilty because we've wasted yet another day, we take one day of our week not only to stop, but to take our hands off, to let go of our human desire to meddle, and once more reaffirm that we trust God enough to let him be in control of our lives and the world he created. And in taking a day to rest in him, whatever that might look like for us, and whatever day that might be in our week, we actually, rather than becoming less human, become more human. Because we become more like God, the God who stopped. And in becoming more like him, we once again stand out as distinct in our society today.